And a lot of people, like when I tell them breathing is the most underrated skill for a high performer, and every athlete is like, you're crazy.
Yes.
And what a lot of lifters don't realize is when they start to get nervous and anxious, their body's panicking. It's going into that. It's not fight. It's flight. If you look, there's a viral video of when LeBron James played for the Miami Heat, and I show it to all my teams and athletes. It was like game seven of a semifinal. They had to win the game to go to the championship. And it was like they were down less than 2 minutes to play. On a timeout, he comes over to the side of the bench, sits down. He leans back like this. He closes his eyes, and he takes about 3 to 4 long, slow, deep breaths. In a crucial moment of the game, on the sideline, at a timeout. And so after I try to convince groups and athletes about how important breathing is, I show them the video. And then they're like, if LeBron James can do it, I can do it.
Welcome to The Future is Female Powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or a message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in.
Aloha, my beautiful friends, and welcome back. We are on episode 99. It's pretty exciting. We're on our second to the 100th episode, which for me is pretty amazing. Been around a couple years now, and 100 episodes is epic. But today, on episode 99, we have one of my friends, Mr. Roger Kitchen Jr., who is a mental performance coach, and he is the owner of Power Mental Performance, where you can find him everywhere, Instagram, Facebook. I'm going to link all his information in our show notes, and you have to check him out. Today was a wonderful podcast because I feel that we really got to speak about all the areas that I think everybody has problems with at some point. I think you get better at nerves and anxiety and these things as we keep competing. But today, Roger gave us some real applicable things that we can do right now to help improve our performance. Roger tells us a little bit about his journey in powerlifting. You know, he actually was powerlifting a very long time ago, took a break, came back. It's really kind of a cool story. And then we get into the meat and potatoes of what are some things that we can do to help calm our nerves during meet day. And this, it doesn't matter if it's your first time or your 15th time. What are some things that we can actually do to help us? And would you believe there's some practice to it? A lot of this involves you training for this. And I like how we were able to break it down and really talk about what you can do in training in the gym to help you stay focused, and not worry too much about the outcomes and the things that you can't control, and worry more about the process and how you can excel in the process. And the results will show themselves. Remember, this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, where we live through strength. And if you're looking for online training, team training, if you're just looking for some help, some guidance, hit us up at core256.com. We are taking some online clients right now, not too many more. So if you're interested, we can have a little conversation about it. And remember, if you want to support the show, give us a little like, take a screenshot of the episode, tag me in it on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook, wherever you're at. It's the Future's Female Powerlifting Podcast, and let me know, and I'd love to share it. And if you want to help support the show with some apparel, visit my website, core256.com. You can find our shop on there, and we have just a few items. It just helps to keep the show going. As you know, I don't have any sponsors. Rarely do I ever have sponsors. I think one of the few I only had was Girls Who Powerlift, because I love them to death. Ivy's a fantastic person, but I'm very particular who I have on the show, and I'm not about like just putting sponsors on there for the sake of it. It ain't worth the money. So unless they do something good for you guys and they offer something that's valuable to you guys, I don't want them on the show. So if you want to support me and support the show, visit core256.com and shop some of our apparel. Now let's get into it with Roger. Today we have Mr. Roger Kitchen Jr. And I've known Roger for, gosh, Roger, like 5 years?
Probably 5 years.
Yeah. Since I moved here.
I started powerlifting back in 2016, so it wasn't long after that.
Yeah, but you had been powerlifting before, right?
So it's interesting. I got introduced to powerlifting in my early 20s when I was in college.
Right.
And where I went to college didn't have a team. They had a team, but it had disbanded. So I ended up, like a lot of powerlifters, you find a local gym.
Yeah.
And I was just going to weightlift. And then there were powerlifters in the gym. And kind of the rest is history. I got introduced to powerlifting through them. And then I was like, oh, I like this. because I had always done the just normal weightlifting and I wasn't getting results, wasn't seeing the things that I wanted to see. But when I just fell in with this group of powerlifters, like everything just changed. Size, strength, and all those good things that follow just kind of came to pass. And I was like, man, I'm hooked.
Yeah.
And then graduate college, life hits, get married, have kids, move around. 24 years go by. I'm in Huntsville now. I'm originally from the Northeast. I was born outside DC, grew up in PA. And I'm working a job, particular place has a gym. I'm like, I'm going to get back into the weight room. I'd always been around the weights anyway, but I'm like, I want to power lift again. So how do you prepare now after a 24-year break of not competing? Getting back into the sport, you're a master now. You're not 20-something where you can run through a brick wall every day.
Yeah.
And the particular job I was working, there was a sports psychologist there, and he and I shared an office. And when I told him about what I wanted to do, we just started talking through the whole process of mentally getting ready to compete again after like a 24-year break.
Wow.
And then I was like, every powerlifter needs to know this stuff.
Yeah.
And then I had been in and around CrossFit too. And so I was like, every CrossFitter needs to know. And then I was finally like, no, every athlete needs to know how to mentally and emotionally manage themselves so that they can, you know, perform at their peak.
Yeah.
Even when it's hard and even when it's uncomfortable, how do you still do that? So that's really how I got into the powerlifting again and how I fell into the mental skills coaching.
How was that for you? Was that your first real introduction to some sort of performance psychology? So you had never really thought about that, right?
No.
Did it blow your mind?
Well, I think there was some simplicity to it, mm-hmm. which was interesting to me. And he didn't make it overly complicated when he was kind of talking me through how to prepare for a meet mentally and emotionally. And I think that's what resonated. It was pretty simplistic. You know, I'm older, so, you know, with age comes some wisdom, some maturity. So you do handle those situations, hopefully a little bit better.
Yeah.
But it was a simplistic approach. And for me, it just clicked and resonated. And that's how I got into starting my coaching practice, Power Mental Performance. And I always joke with people. I said, I was my first client because everything that my friend taught me about sports psychology and how to prepare, I used it on me.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, took the step of faith and started a coaching practice. So I tell people all the time, I'm like, it works. Like, I'm my first client. It worked with me. I know it'll work for you. And, you know, that's been going now. I started the coaching practice in 2017. So what, year five or six now? But yeah, I think it was the simplicity is what resonated.
Yeah.
And it was easy to apply.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, I don't think people maybe in our industry don't think powerlifting and mental performance go hand in hand. I took a sports psychology course in college, and my teacher was Tiger Woods' sports psychologist or at one point.
Wow.
I know. I remember being like, whoa, that's a huge deal. And I think that I'd always thought of, because the game is slow and there's a lot to think about, mm-hmm. how the ball's going to fly, how you're breathing through, you know, and I thought, oh, I could apply that. But it isn't until I think you start really powerlifting, weightlifting, those kind of things, you realize how important your mental is for every sort of performance.
And yeah. So I always ask athletes, what percentage of your sport's mental?
What do you think?
Yeah. Well, you tell me, what do you think? Think 10? Of powerlifting.
Oh, now, for powerlifting?
What percent of powerlifting is mental?
Oh, my goodness. So much of it. I would say at least 80%. And that's probably
honestly. Yeah. Most people land at 80 to 90%. And so I think that's true. Yeah. And then when you look at, think about our powerlifting routines, you know, obviously the strength and conditioning piece, the nutrition, physical therapy, chiropractor, all the, you know, flexibility, mobility, all those things that we're doing to just make us better. And then we go, how much do we devote to the mental aspect? And most people would be like, zero.
Yeah.
And our mindset is sometimes I'm just going to tough it out.
Yeah.
Like I'm just going to grind. I'm just going to tough it out. And I'm just going to be kind of bigger, faster, stronger. And that works in certain situations. But when you do that over a long period of time, it's pretty mentally and emotionally exhausting. Yeah. Like that's why a lot of lifters and people in particular sports burn out. Like yeah. they'll just grind, 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 push, push, push. But they don't understand how to nurture, work on their mental, emotional aspect of their performance. Yeah. And it's, you know, for some people, they think, you know, there's maybe a stigma around it where it's like, if I reach out for help to a sports psychologist or mental skills coach, it's a sign of weakness. It's uncomfortable for them. They've never really worked with somebody like me or a sports psychologist. And so I think there's maybe some misconceptions inside their head, but then when they do it, they're like, why have I not been doing this my whole athletic career?
Right.
So there's a little bit of a hurdle, but I mean, with coming out of the pandemic, you know, there's a lot of attention on mental health and wellness that's really helping the sports industry. In particular, the NBA, the Players Association, 2 years ago passed a resolution that every NBA team has to have two clinical psychologists on their staff now.
Wow.
So when you think about when the NBA players were inside the bubble, they were quarantined, they couldn't go come and go as they wanted. You saw a lot of mental health and wellness attention to that, as well as players dealing with some of their own issues. But the NBA was very proactive and, you know, the Players Association got those resolutions passed. So when you look at all sports teams now, Division I college, all professional sports, they have sports psychologists, clinical psychologists, they have mental skills coaches. A good friend of mine is a mental skills coach for the Sacramento Kings in the NBA.
Wow.
So it's becoming very common now.
Yeah.
And if teams aren't, they're behind.
Yeah.
So come back to the athlete. If we're not working on it day in, day out and have a plan, we're behind.
Yeah.
At some point, the grind and the toughness and just I'm gonna tough it out will catch up to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's great. I'd love to talk about how powerlifters can, you know, what are some tips powerlifters can do? And I know we had spoke before. A lot of people who are listening to the show are in their first or second year of powerlifting. And I was saying that I just had somebody message me, you know, just recently asking me about what some tips to calm my nerves. Yeah. It's my first meet. I'm 17 years old. And if you're listening, I hope you did well. But what are some things that powerlifters can do for to calm their nerves and their anxiety leading into a meet?
Yeah. The athletes that I've coached that struggle in that area, it's where they put their focus. And 9 times out of 10, they're focused on things they can't control.
Yeah.
And so when you think in powerlifting, what are things that we can't control? Like you can't control what the venue's like, the warm-up area. You can't control the judges.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of things outside of our control. Even, and this is when a lifter gets this, you can't control your results.
Yeah.
And so if you could control your results, you'd always go 9 for 9. You'd always PR. You'd get that, you know, you'd get the record. And so learning where to put your focus is huge. Now, that's a mental skill, and it's a skill for a reason, because it takes practice, just like it takes practice to have a good squat, bench, or deadlift. It takes practice to train your focus on things that you can control.
Yeah.
So when I work with an athlete, I give them a sheet of paper, and I say, make a T, in a big T on the sheet of paper. And one side, I say, is your controllables, and the other side is your uncontrollables. And I want you to write out everything you can't control. And they'll make an exhaustive list. And I say, write out everything you can't, you know, you do control. So uncontrollables and controllables. And, you know, they'll list all the things that they can control. And it ends up being a little bit shorter. Usually that uncontrollable list is huge.
Huge.
The controllable list is a little bit smaller. And it typically ends up in 3 buckets. It's usually effort. I can control my effort. I can control my focus, and then it's mindset or attitude. And I really like the word mindset. So when I approach performance, if I work this stuff daily in my training routines, and that's the other key, practice this in your training routines day in, day out. What is it that I can control? And always focus on what you can control. So focus is a skill. It's like a muscle. Your brain's a muscle. And so you just, when your thoughts go to things, and typically here's what's going to happen. When you start feeling nervous, anxious, doubt, really what's happening is you're starting to focus on those things you can't control.
Yeah.
And that's like the check engine light on a car that's going, hey, something's up, something's not right. And then you learn to just put your focus, even if you talk it out loud, I can't control that.
Yeah.
And then you put that focus back on, you know, what you can control. So typically just in training, my routine is, you know, my coach sends me my routine for the day. I look at it and I'm like, there's routines you're like, it's going to be a long day.
I know you're coach, so.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. And there's other, like I got my workout yesterday. When I got it, I was like, oh man, good. Today's just not, it's an easier day. But you really learn to break it down. And I would say the second tip is a process. So when you go into training, if you look at your entire workout for that day, it can be overwhelming. Because there's just a lot that could be going on in that particular. So you really learn, again, it's a skill that you have to develop. I'm just going to focus on my warm up. That's it. That's the only thing that matters in the moment.
Yeah.
My warm up. And then I'm just going to focus on that next set. My next set and certain number of reps.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to stay present in that moment.
Right.
And then after that, I'm just going to focus on the next set and those reps. And you really learn to break it down in terms of a simple process, very much step by step. Now, for the new lifters, as they start practicing this, there's going to be days they may do it well, and there's going to be days where they don't do it well. And there's going to be days where they may get frustrated and go, oh, I keep focusing on things I can't control, and I keep feeling. And I would say, be patient with yourself.
Yeah.
Just like you had to be patient getting the form and technique on the three lifts. Be patient with yourself from a mental perspective. Give yourself some grace and some compassion in the process. Don't beat yourself up. A lot of the athletes that I've worked with were like, I always joke, I'm a recovering perfectionist. So like I've always been really hard on myself. And over time I've learned to let that go. And a lot of lifters fall into that too, where they're so perfectionistic that if the training doesn't go a certain way, a certain lift doesn't go a certain way, certain meet doesn't go, like they're just messed up. Oh,
crumble.
Yeah. And so again, it's getting really specific on what you can control and then learn how to stay more of in a process.
Yeah.
And not focus on the result. And as a power lifter, that is super hard not to focus on the result, because here's a common trap. I didn't hit my lifts today in training, therefore I'm not going to hit my lifts at the meet.
Yes.
And it's like they go so far out into the future, and it's like, is that true or not true?
Right.
It's not true.
Not true.
It was one workout. And you know, learning how to go, it was one workout. You know, so you learn to talk yourself through this as well. So controlling what you can control, having, you know, knowing where to put your focus, and really learning how to coach yourself in a positive way. You know, that the chatter inside our head can be, you know, crazy. And so learning how to just step back and really go, is it true or not true? It's not true. It's one workout. It's, you know, there's all of us, even the best of the best, have bad training days.
Oh yeah.
It's part of the process.
And yeah, so I love that. I mean, I love sort of the breaking down of that, because when you do, let's say, show up to meet, some things go not as planned, right? You can still grab onto what you normally do in practice. Because I think as coaches, we try, and I can't speak for all coaches, but I think a lot of them, we try to systemize certain things so that it's, they don't have to think about it, right? The walkout,
right. Yeah.
The loading, the breathing, the bracing. It shouldn't be voluntary anymore. I mean, that it becomes second nature so that you don't have to mentally give.
Think.
Exactly. We don't have to give to that anymore, right? So we try to systemize those things. But systemizing the process also in that way to set up our brain. And I guess I never thought about it in that way, which how it would benefit if shit hits the fan, right?
Like, yeah.
Or things don't go as planned. And I think I work with a lot of perfectionists, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And most of my
one-on-one clients are perfectionists.
And maybe those are the people that seek out performance too, you know, because they see the potential in that area. I definitely was that person. Like, things had to be
just a certain way, right?
Yes. And I will say, and I might trigger some people when they listen to this, all the weights need to be facing a certain way. And you can't have like mismatching plates, like that, you know, like they can be 25, but they can't be the blue 25 and, or the, you know, different styles of the lines on the floor have to match before I pull. The bar cannot be crooked. There can, you know, like when all of your environments have to be so a certain way, you're, to me, setting yourself up for failure, because it'll never be that way.
Yeah. And I think a good drill for those that fall into that is to mismatch plates.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, mismatch plates make the bar look ugly. There's a lot of value in process. There's a lot of value in doing things a certain way. You can push that too far because, you know, like when you go to a meet, I've had my bar loaded wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm ready to go up there and like on a deadlift and pull and somebody catches it, or I pulled it and they had the wrong weight on. So I got to pull again.
Yeah.
So there's things that we could do in training that help maybe ease that a little bit, so that when something out of your control happens at the meet, you have a process by which you can recover. So like it's control your controllables. It's put your focus on those things. It's having a process. And then I would say in terms of just managing the emotion, the anxiety, the fear, is really the mindfulness piece that comes in now, which is learning how to breathe. And a lot of people, like when I tell them, breathing is the most underrated skill for a high performer, and every athlete is like, you're crazy.
Yes.
I'm like, I'm not crazy.
Every day.
Yeah. And what a lot of lifters don't realize is when they start to get nervous and anxious, their body's panicking. It's going into that, it's not fight, it's flight. And their body, and what happens is their breathing gets super shallow. So they'll breathe choppy versus long, slow, deep breaths.
Yeah.
In through the nose, out through the mouth. If you look, there's a viral video of when LeBron James played for the Miami Heat, and I show it to all my teams and athletes. It was like game 7 of a semifinal. They had to win the game to go to the championship. If they didn't win, they're done. And it was like they were down less than 2 minutes to play. On a timeout, he comes over to the side of the bench, sits down. He leans back like this. He closes his eyes, and he takes about 3 to 4 long, slow, deep breaths in a crucial moment of the game on the sideline at a timeout. And so after I try to convince groups and athletes about how important breathing is, I show them the video. And then they're like, if LeBron James can do it, I can do it.
Right.
But golfers, like as you alluded to the sports psychology class, they've learned the value of a slow process between holes, a process between holes, and that long, slow, deep breathing to just keep their body in that right state to make sure that that fight or flight doesn't trigger. So it's not uncommon for me in my own training that if I feel that nervousness or anxiousness, or like there's days I'm like, I just don't want to be here.
Yeah.
I'll just sit there and just take long, slow, deep breaths. And I'm a big fan of the self-talk, positive self-talk, and coming up with those catchphrases that just keep me in the moment. So a lot of times I'm like, just one more rep, next set. You know, I may get like positive and say, I'm relentless. I'm a beast. I can't be stopped.
Yeah.
You know, and so these sort of mantras that I've developed just for me that work for me, especially when you get super process oriented, you've got like 4 sets of 3 at like 80 to 90% of a squat. where you're like, you approach it one set at a time and you're like, it's just three.
Yeah.
It's just three. Yeah. And then the next set is just three. And you learn to break those things down. But the mindfulness and the breathing and learning how to practice that really well between lifts, between attempts at a meet, it's not uncommon for me between attempts to just go sit, mm-hmm. just close my eyes and take some long, slow, deep breaths just to recenter and yep. reset. And just kind of, you know, all of us like to have a little bit of edge as we get to the platform. That confidence has to be there. Too much of that's not good, and yes. not enough of it's not good. So you learn to manage that energy in a certain way.
Yeah.
But that long, slow, deep breathing practice just keeps you from tweaking.
Yeah.
And, you know, not panicking and learning how to just have that nice, still confidence as you hit the platform.
I think some of the best lifters out there, yeah. I mean, Brian Carroll, some of the bigger named lifters, you never see them yelling, screaming. You know, occasionally we do, but some of the best lifters out there are so composed, so great under pressure, are very focused.
You'll even see them a little relaxed.
Yeah.
Like coming off the platform, like they're relaxed.
Yeah.
Almost light, you know, where they can talk and maybe crack a joke, but yeah. then they know when to flip the switch and hit it again.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about when you were talking about thriving. And what is the difference between thrive versus surviving training? And I think when you talk about breathing, maybe our parasympathetic, which is something that happens as we start breathing and sort of relaxing.
Yeah.
Does that all tie into the differences? Can you explain that a little bit for us?
Yeah. So a lot of people, I see this more with those that are kind of hitting that burnout phase where when they approach training, it's like, I got to go to training versus I'm going to enjoy training today.
Yeah.
So I think the difference between thrive and survive is that, you know, even though the workout may be hard, I still want to go and I want to enjoy it. Their surviving piece could be where people maybe get a little perfectionistic and they're like, if I don't hit these lifts, I'm not going to be strong for the meet. So I think a lot in terms of its perception, any way we respond to adversity is always perception. Some people like a challenge. Some people don't mind something difficult. When adversity hits, they're okay. And so we have to really reinterpret our perception of those things. And, you know, when somebody gets to a place where they're like, this is good for me, when somebody gets in that space and they're like, it's hard, but I want to attempt it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest thing I tell people and to get them off results. So when you tell a lifter the way you're successful in powerlifting is not by focusing on your results. So it's like when I tell a team the best way to win is not focus on winning.
They're like,
and it's what? Count. They're like, yeah, like that makes no sense to me, Roger. Unpack that one.
Yeah.
So when you get back to staying really good at your process, you know, when you really know what your process is and you work your process and you put your attention on having good training sessions, the results always take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where you thrive, which is you learn to let go of the results. The way I'm a great powerlifter is by not focusing on powerlifting. The way I hit my maxes is by not focusing on my maxes. The way I hit my maxes is by I spend 80% of my time thinking about what's going to make a good workout routine today.
Yeah.
What's going, you know, 20% of my thought life should be on the result, but 80% of my thought life should be on just killing my process.
Yeah.
Get really, really good at killing your process. That's simple things like sleep, nutrition, health, flexibility, all the things that help you be a good powerlifter. And, you know, good coaching, good programming, going in and having good sessions. So like when you're controlling what you can control and you focus on the process and you don't focus on a result, it makes that, it helps you thrive versus survive.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so, like I said, 80% of the time should be process oriented. It's what's my workout today? What's my workouts this week? You know, if you can afford to enlist a coach, then they kind of take that burden off you. I did my programming for a long time.
Me too.
But a mutual friend of ours, Chris Lentini's programming me now for the state meet. And it's just nice. It's like, I don't have to think about it. It's just the workout shows up, you know, and then we have good, healthy banter. I'm like, so what's on the plate today? He's like, pain. I'm like, I already ate that for breakfast. So what else you got? you know, so, it, you know, if you can afford a coach, that's great because they help with the process. But that's kind of where, you know, I think really, really good athletes thrive is when they're just more focused on their process and enjoying the routine. And again, the biggest thing I coach an Olympic powerlifter in college over at Lenoir Ryan University. And I told her, I said, if you could make every lift, you'd never miss. So like, it's an uncontrollable, control what you could control. So interesting, Travis Mash, mm-hmm. who everybody knows, mm-hmm. he coaches at Lenoir Ryan.
Okay.
So 2-time national champion in Olympic weightlifting. He's put together a phenomenal program over there. But you know, she was the one that, you know, when she finally was like, oh, so my lift attempts and my training are uncontrollable. Yeah, it's uncontrollable. And then it's, when you start to see numbers, like this is another trick for lifters. We see certain numbers on squat, you know, bench or deadlift in our programming, and we go, oh, that looks big.
Yeah.
You know, it feels a little intimidating, and we get into the what if. What if I miss it? What are people going to think about me? What if I fail? What if I bomb out? And I say the perception there is stay curious. And that, and when I was talking through this with this particular lifter, I said, here's what I mean by that. Instead of thinking, what if I fail? What if you hit it? What if you hit that? I said, stay curious. Go in with the mindset of, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
And you take the burden off the result and you put it more on the process. Maybe the form and technique, you know, like you said, let's take squat, the setup, the brace, the breathing. When you get under the bar on the heavy weight, you're either not thinking or you have like one mental cue. So like for me, I'll just say squat, just squat it. Like heavy weight, like just squat. You know, I'm not thinking about anything else.
Yeah.
I even have a focal point on the bar. So like you'll see me look at the center of the bar, probably take a nice long, slow, deep breath, and then underneath, and then it's just squat.
Yeah.
And it's super simple, but teaching an athlete and having them practice, just stay curious. What if it goes well? Like go in with the mindset of, you know, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
And when an athlete gets there, then they're put themselves in a little bit of a better place to perform.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that I don't think I've ever looked at it as stay curious, right?
Stay curious.
What if it goes well? Yeah. Like what if, and I think like, I do have more people that are always, nobody ever looks at the number and thinks, oh yeah, it's always like, oh my gosh, that is, I am going to go for that. Like, or you know, what if I don't hit it? And I think I get more of that. So I never approached it in the sense like stay curious in a positive way. I always go, let's just see. And I guess I never really think about it. Like you never know what you're going to get.
I'll say this too. The other trick that I've used with two different lifters, they would reach out to me and they're like, they give me a number for a squat or deadlift. And they're like, I've never done that before, or it's really heavy. What if, you know, I don't know if I can move it. I say, I want you to fail in practice.
Yeah.
I want you to fail during training. Go put that number on the bar and attempt it, you know, when it's appropriate within your programming, like you hit certain peaks in your cycle, put it on and see what happens. And if you don't hit it, that's fine.
Yeah.
Cause I want you to train your brain to just do it. And then when you do it, let's say you miss it. We've all missed numbers in training. Like, did you die?
Yeah.
like, was it that devastating? Like, was it that terrible? It really wasn't.
No,
and so
important, I think, for people to have missed lifts.
Yeah, so I tell lifters all the time, miss lifts all the time. Like, just do it. Fail. Get used to that. Because what will happen is if they miss a lift in training. And so look, in a meet, it's not about if you miss a lift, it's when. You're always going to miss a lift in a meet. I rarely go 9 for 9. It just doesn't happen. So I say, because what happens is if they do miss a lift, it doesn't feel as devastating in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they've repped it out in training. So in training, you give them permission to fail and you want them to fail. And you look at them and go, I need you to fail because it's going to make you a better lifter. So a lot of it comes back to what I said, perception. Perception of my training, perception of lifts, perception of max reps. But put the weight on the bar and see what happens.
Yeah.
And you're not going to die.
No.
It's supposed to be positive and help you. So, you know, let's just kind of get after it.
Don't like that concept of the 9 for 9.
I
don't really like the concept of 9 for 9, just the popularity around it, because there is a perception of perfection in that. And I don't that. And I can get that some people, it's good if you did go 9 for 9, but that shouldn't be such a goal, because some people get, I mean, like, oh, I only hit, 7 of 9. I'm like, you hit 7 of 9. Did you PR? Did you add weight on the bar on your total? Yeah. Then who cares if it's 7 of 9?
You only need 3.
Yeah.
So, I think it's good maybe for younger lifters. Like my son did his first meet out in Sheffield when you were running the meet there. I think he went 8 for 9, or maybe he went 9 for 9. I forget. So for young lifters, I think it's good as they get introduced to the sport. Mm. Because, when we were doing trace programming and going into the meet, I said, it's your first meet. There's going to be a lot going on. Oh, yeah. It's going to be brand new. You're not going to know everything. So we were conservative on his lifts by choice, because, I want him to get used to going on the platform.
Totally.
I want him to get used to standing in front of judges, picking your weight and all those things that go into. Once you get a couple of meets under your belt where you understand the routines, then we can put the foot on the gas and maybe we go 7 for 9. Maybe we go, I've gone 5 for 9.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where you learn not to hang your hat on the 9 for 9 or a number per 9. You're really taking it at what my lift should be per, event.
Yeah.
So whatever, it's squat, bench, or deadlift. And then whatever happens, whether I go 3 for 9, 7 for 9, 9 for 9, that's a byproduct. It's better to be a little bit more targeted on what you want those lifts to be versus, 9 for 9.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. Roger, I feel like you've gave us so much wonderful insight. I'm so thankful to have you on this show talking about all this. Where can people get in contact with you and what type of services do you provide when it comes to mental performance?
So I'm on Instagram. So Power Mental Performance on Instagram. I have a website, powermentalperformance.com. So you can reach out to me there. And I do one-on-one coaching with a lot of the lifters. So they'll come to me. Usually it may be somebody that's perfectionistic, or they're just like, I'm struggling, I'm strong, but like at meets, that all that training doesn't come through. And at meets, I'm in my head. I'm worried about missing lifts. I'm stressed out. They're just focusing on things I can't control. So I'll set up one-on-one coaching with them, do a needs assessment, sit down with a lifter and talk about what their goals are, why they power lift. And that's really important. You got to really understand, why are you in the sport?
Yeah.
We beat our bodies up. Most people don't wake up and go, I'm a good power lift.
Yeah.
It's just not like that. So you have to understand really what the intrinsic purpose is of them getting into the sport. But after I sit down and kind of unpack all that and get to know them, then we just set up a certain number of coaching sessions that get them to that place. My program focuses on 5 things. It's increase self-confidence, improve focus, perform under pressure, achieve goals. When I work with teams, my 5th pillar is can create a positive team culture. But for the power lifters, it's easily the first 4, because think about it. They could be struggling with confidence, their focus, not performing under pressure well, and then maybe not achieving their goals. So that's really what I sit down with each lifter and walk through a process. I've got a system set up that helps them do that. So yeah, they can reach out to me on the website. They can hit me up through Instagram. I'm also on Facebook with Power Mental Performance. So, you know, pretty easy to get in touch with me.
Yeah. And I'll have all your information in our show notes so everybody can get in contact.
Yeah. So you can share my phone number, email address, those kind of things too.
Yeah. I love it, Roger. I never really thought about the whole process and how that would benefit on a practicing level, right? Of course, you'd have to practice that, and then how that's going to apply meet day, and how that would, you know, how that would look meet day, right? So I love that the way that we could see that, because I feel like there's a lot of holes maybe in some of the coaching that I do where I could help, you know, my clients perform better day of, because I've had some high level athletes go through some tons of uncontrollables day of. I wasn't even prepared for those kind of uncontrollables. Like, so, you know, I tried to do what I could as a coach, but it mentally rocks them. So now it's like, okay, should this happen again? We've already kind of went down that route. But I love the way that you process this. And I'm sure everybody got some great information out of this. And Roger, I thank you so much. And I think we're going to have you back again, huh? What do you think?
Let's do that. Okay. You know what we can do? The next session, the next podcast, we'll talk about actually what to do to meet.
Oh, I love it.
So we'll actually break down what a mental skills program looks like for a meet.
Wonderful. I love it. Stay tuned for that, everybody. Thank you so much, Roger.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's great seeing you.